This is Mitchell Dye with Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Simon Ramsay joining us in just a second. He's just out in the corridor making small talk with Rosa and Gina on their way out, but he'll be with us very shortly. Also after 10 o'clock, Jennifer Cromartie's coming in, maybe Beverly MacArthur, although apparently she might be in a meeting that we don't know when that's going to finish, but hopefully she'll be with us, and a bunch of other stuff as well, into sport as well, tanking. There's lots to talk about. But Simon, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Mitch.
Good to see you.
You too, and good morning to your listeners.
I'm going to be in the Q&A audience tonight again, getting back on that horse. Oh, wish me luck.
Well, you were front and centre last time, so whether you get that opportunity again, I'm not sure.
But usually how it goes is they put you in the front row, then the next time you go, you're like second from the back, like out of sight of the cameras. So it rotates around, they give everyone a go. So probably won't be front and centre, but an audience with the Treasurer. Let's hear about the budget.
Yeah, well, it was a great opportunity to be able to ask questions of the Treasurer through the panel. And obviously there's some different views around the table about the impacts of the budget. But, my reading of it was a good budget. Now the Treasurer and also the Prime Minister have got the opportunity, I think, as I understand, to have a few weeks now to sell it to the public.
Yeah, let's get on to that in a second. But just first of all, to breaking news, the main sort of intersection in Melbourne, Flinders Street and Swanston Street and St Kilda Road, seems to be blocked by animal rights protesters. From what I can see, I've been sent some video of that. They've parked a van sort of in the middle of the intersection and there's a bunch of people standing around. So tram routes are affected, people commuting to work are affected, tradies are affected.
Yeah, look, it's a well-organised activist group. That,
but I didn't know it was on today. Did you know it was on today?
No, but I did get a text at 4:30 this morning to say they were meeting in Treasury Gardens.
And why are you on their list?
Well, I'm not on their list. I actually got it from someone else.
Okay.
But if you remember way back when I was president of the Victorian Federation Livestock Group, I went down to Portland to help support the live export trade, which is particularly important at that time for our farmers in Victoria, sheep farmers particularly, and had a bit of a fight with Ralph Hanhauser, who was heading up the animal rights group down there. And of course, he actually put ham in the feedlots, which to our Middle Eastern customers was like contaminating a whole shipload of product. And that cost millions of dollars. And we re-looked at the Crimes Act in respect to that action that the animal rights group did down there. But again, I question why the police aren't using the powers they've already got in relation to nuisance trespass. There's clauses in the Crimes Act that can stop that sort of activity lawfully, or they're actually acting illegally by that. And I also see they're down at Herd's Meatworks this morning in Geelong.
So
with
it's
a big,
statewide almost.
As I said, it's quite strategic in what they're doing. They're causing maximum confusion and highlighting their issues, but they're breaking the law, and I sort of urge the police to do what they can to use the legislation that they've got to make them accountable for their actions.
What about right to peaceful protest, though?
Well, I don't think it is peaceful. They're actually hindering trade. They've actually closed a business down in Gippsland by their actions. They've trespassed. They've broken the law, Mitchell. So I really believe we should all stand accountable for our actions, and they're no different.
Yeah, so it's a tough issue. I've debated this with someone who's very sort of pro getting out there onto the streets and protesting and being an activist before, and I was taking particular exception with the people that glued their hands to the railings in Parliament, Federal Parliament, because we've all voted in people to go and represent us, and these people that no one voted for are standing there interrupting the people that are representing us and their right to speak, and I think that's a problem. But this person said, well, if their issue's not being heard anywhere else, they have a right to go and take it on. And that seems to be the dilemma that the police face as well. It's sort of, where do we step in? Where do we draw the line? Yes, we should be arresting these people. Like, if anyone else stood on the streets, it would be a serious issue. But because they're protesting, we've got to let them go because they have to make their point.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's legal opportunities and pathways to send a message out to the public. And, even with rallies, there's legal rallies, and I'm sure, in this case, the vegan activists can use the law legally to demonstrate their concern around, obviously, the use of meat production and the use of animals, animal farming, and you've had Andrew Medic in here a number of times espousing his views in relation to that. But there's a way to do it lawfully, but what I'm concerned about is the fact that their actions actually now are having a significant impact to businesses right across Victoria in our state, and in fact causing some financial hardship to them.
What I always say is, why don't the protesters just set up in a park somewhere and get their megaphones and all that sort of thing, and they can do it without disrupting anyone? And I'm sure that the TV cameras would still show up in the park because it's good footage to see them there making their points known. Why does it have to disrupt people? But then the argument is, well, we're talking about it now, therefore they're right and it's justified.
But they're breaking the law, and again, they need to be stood accountable for their actions, and I certainly encourage the police to use the powers that they've got, whether it's move-on laws, trespass laws, punitive laws, harassment laws, under the Criminal Act legislation, to stop them harassing and actually incurring significant costs to businesses that are affected by their actions.
In this video that I've got, someone's calling out, think of the insects, guys, they all have lives too. And I'm not sure if that is the people trying to agitate the animal rights protest, or if that is the animal rights protesters themselves, but that's what's going on right now in the CBD.
Yeah, and I expect we'll see more of it. As I said, it sounds like a fairly good strategic plan to disrupt as much as possible, highlight their messages and cause disruption. Now, they're doing all those things, and it seems the police are reluctant to use the powers they've got to apply punitive action under the legislation we've currently got.
Now, I might see if Jennifer's happy for you to stay on after, I don't know what you're doing this morning, but see if she's happy for you to stay on to keep talking about the budget. But one thing I am interested in is the actual election date. There was supposed to be an election called yesterday, we thought, but no, they're still going on. So I think that means that May 11th is now ruled out, and it has to pretty much be on May 18th, or at a stretch, May 25th.
Yeah, well, as I understand it, those are the three option dates. It appears that the Prime Minister may well be moving towards May 18th. I have no more knowledge of that than anyone else, but it would appear they're going to use the opportunity in this week, particularly before the Prime Minister meets the Governor-General in respect to calling an election date, is using the government's financial means to sell the budget message, allow some space. But of course, my view is many people have switched off already. They've had a small interest in what the budget might deliver for them, but basically turned off. And we've got a Victorian budget in a couple of weeks, which obviously the state Labor government will want to message, and that will confuse some of the federal budget issues. And then we go into Easter, Anzac Day, and a few more holidays, and suddenly May appear. So I understand the coalition are concerned about the holiday breaks, and also the opportunity to use this week using the government's means to deliver messages through, I'd imagine, a lot of advertising.
As a former state MP who's lived under the fixed-term system of elections, where we know what the date is going to be a long time in advance, do you think that should be implemented in federal politics?
I do. I've always been of a view the federal term of government should be 4 years. I mean, everyone knows the date then. They work towards the date. What I see federally is we're in ongoing campaign mode, so it's hard to get policy with substance through the parliament, particularly hard now with the Senate as it is, without having it being compromised by the sort of electioneering and pork barrelling that goes on with normal election cycles. So my view is definitely 4 years for the federal parliament term, and it should be quicker than later.
Now, the Northern Arc, on Dennis's program a couple of weeks ago, he had Peter Loney and Tony Ansett in, who he has on a regular basis on Thursdays, and they were saying the real problem with the Northern Arc is that the council has failed to put together a plan for the North. And I thought that was kind of ignoring the responsibilities of the state and federal government on that issue as well. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, well, I don't agree with that. I mean, the councillors, and certainly I've worked with them last year in relation to the Northern Arc, and as you know, as a coalition in government, we provided $33 million for Barwon Health North, the medical centre in the northern suburbs. The Northern Arc is a great compatible health and wellbeing centre for that medical centre. And I can't understand when you've got the City of Greater Geelong wanting to invest probably the single biggest investment ever in Geelong, $20 million of their own money, to complement potentially $20 million from the state and $20 million from the federal government. Why our federal MP, Richard Marles, and our state MP, John Aaron, who purport to represent the north and northern suburbs, aren't getting on board. It just seems to me a gift we've got currently at this moment that we've got one tier of government willing to put $20 million of ratepayers' money up for this very important facility for the northern suburbs, yet we have reluctance from our state Labor and federal Labor MPs who represent the area.
Marles last week on the program said he's fighting for the Northern Arc, but he said the problem is the Liberal federal government, he said they need a magnifying glass on the map to see where Geelong is located. So he thinks that they ignore Geelong.
That's just nonsense, and it's absolutely childish from Richard Marles. I mean, seriously, he's done very little for his electorate, as has John. To be fair, there's been very little focus on North Geelong and the infrastructure it needs, and it's really an opportunity, particularly when we know the northern suburbs are dealing with a whole lot of challenges in respect to employment, generational unemployment, and some of the drugs and other issues associated with that. So here's a perfect opportunity to provide a first-class hub that will give those communities in the north a great opportunity to be able to improve their lifestyle.
We have to go to the news. Hold that thought, and we'll try and get you back after 10 o'clock to continue the discussions around the budget with Jennifer Cromartie.
Until 11, local, national and international affairs, plus some goss and scandal. You're listening to Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Into the second hour. We're hoping Beverly MacArthur will join us, but I think she's in a meeting where she apparently could go for the whole hour, she says. So she may be able to join us, but if not, she can't. Anyway, we push on. Jennifer Cromartie is here from the Committee for Geelong. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning.
And Simon Ramsay continuing on after the last session.
Can't help yourself, Simon.
The news is very rude. It always cuts you off, Simon.
Oh, is he going to blame me for that?
I'll just get you over to mic 4, Simon. I think we're having issues with mic 3, but that's okay. Now, maths. Now, one of the questions...
Yay! No, I knew we'd be talking about math at first,
because,
Simon.
I am in the audience for Q&A tonight.
Oh, wonderful!
Getting back on that horse.
Yeah, you do a great job.
Cue all the abuse. Yeah. But one of the questions I've put in, and they probably won't choose any of my questions, as I was saying to Simon, because they usually like to rotate it. It's not fair if the same person's on every time they're in Melbourne. But one of the things I put in was that maths apparently trumped the budget speech by a considerable margin, something like 5-1 more people watched maths over the budget.
Of course they would. Are you surprised?
I think maths is horrific. It's contrived. Everyone knows it's contrived. And it's very below the belt, if I can use that term.
Probably in a couple of senses.
It should be on later at night.
Oh, in that sense. You did actually mean that sense. Okay.
Am I just too conservative in terms of my views on what should be on TV at 7:30? But some of the things they talk about, in my opinion anyway, just unnecessary. But a lot of people watch it, and two generations, older generations of my family seem to get into it. I don't really like it, and would not go out of my way to watch it at all. Just contrived nonsense. But anyway, your thoughts.
Wow. Well, what I would say is it's the first time I've watched it, and this possibly comes from the fact that my eldest daughter works in entertainment media and has a podcast around these sorts of shows. So I thought I need to be in the loop, otherwise I can't really comment if I haven't watched it. But that being said, I did talk about this over the weekend with a few people, because I've always really enjoyed reality TV as a sense of people watching to a degree, but also, and you may kind of laugh at this, but it does raise issues around how you manage your, and we'll talk about Married at First Sight, your relationships, the issues, self-reflection. So you're probably going to go, how on earth is this related to Married at First Sight and the fights that go on? But you actually go through a journey of people struggling with a lot of issues that they've had in their life around whether it's rejection, whether it's a sense of, you know, self-belief, whether it's, you know, who they are as humans. So all that being said, obviously you see the highlights of people, I don't know, I think it was a wine thrown over someone's head last night, which is fairly outrageous behaviour. But really, it's I think, a really interesting social commentary on human beings. And how is that any different to all of the other reality TVs, you know, Survivor? I used to love Big Brother.
Do the producers say we'll give you $500 if you tip wine over someone's head?
Oh, look,
head?
No idea, and I won't comment on that, obviously. But what I will say is that, you know, obviously these shows get ratings. Of course, there's some scripting, one would assume, in these sorts of shows. But what I would say on the other side of it is I know some people who I really respect who watch it, who look at it also as a form of escapism. Because I also watch, are you ready, The Beverly Hills Housewives. So I look at it and go, oh, that's a really interesting life that I can never really lead. Are these people real? So it's kind of a form of, let's forget everything that's going on in my life and look at what other people are doing.
You see, Jennifer doesn't have Netflix, can't you?
I have Netflix. No. We have Netflix. We have everything. Don't worry.
You choose to watch that.
My mother is glued to Married at First Sight, and she insisted I watch it last night. And like Jennifer, I was trying to make heads or tail of it. Mm. And my friends, who are reasonably intelligent people, just watch it consistently the whole time. Sad for you, Mitch, because I think most people are going to be watching the second or the last.
Yeah, last
tonight. Against
huge.
Q&A's.
Oh, that's all right. If I'm not on TV, that might actually be a good thing.
No,
to
you'll
be
come
honest.
On after it. I think you'll slip in there at 9:30. I reckon you'll be right. But like, but really, bless. And I watched the budget live as well. But I taped Married at First Sight. Not a lot of people are going to watch the budget. Really?
Why? It's very important,
Mitchell. this is the thing, and someone would understand this as a politician. What do people really care about? You know, when they're sitting at home at night, they're going to be being with their family. They want to have a bit of light relief from their daily challenges. So sitting down and listening to Josh Frydenberg's probably not escapism, really.
So we better talk about the budget. I want to get the committee for Geelong's response, and we'll also hear Simon's response. Maybe start with the committee for Geelong's response. Mm. You put out some analysis
on
the budget.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So we don't really comment on good, bad, other, but what we do look at is what does it mean for Geelong, what does it mean for regional Victoria and Victoria as a whole, and I mean, there's a lot of money flowing into Victoria. I noticed the state government put out a response saying, you know, percentages weren't up to whether it's population growth or whatever, but I mean, Victoria has done pretty well, and obviously we've got some significant marginal seats as well. When I look at it, I think there's some interesting news there for regional Victoria. I noticed that the Building Better Regions Fund is in again for around four. And I don't know how forward the budgets are locked in, obviously, but I think there's like $40 million this next financial year and $100 million the year after in Building Better Regions Fund. So that is quite interesting for projects that have maybe missed out in the past. But no, there's significant money there, obviously, around rail infrastructure, and it looks like there's some money going into roads to recovery. So we had a look at it. Obviously, a hospital, we've got the new hospital coming in. It's good to see that, from what I can read, it's fully funded. It was $160 million. Feds have put in $50 million, state $110 million. So all in all, I think having covered a few federal budgets over my lifetime, you know, it's not a bad outcome for Victoria and generally Geelong, obviously, with the city deal thrown in there as well.
Yeah, look, I agree. And I think I saw a table in the newspaper last week that suggested Corangamite actually has been earmarked for more money than any other seat in the whole of Australia in relation to infrastructure and health and education.
Pro rata, so, or just more money?
More
total,
money,
really?
Just total,
wow.
Amongst the marginal seats. So all credit to Sarah for her efforts in getting that money, but a lot of it is backloaded, of course. A lot of the funding, particularly for infrastructure, is in the out years. So, and it's been suggested potentially we're going to have another federal election before another state election, whether and who is in government in relation to how that's delivered. Mm. Certainly rail's very exciting, but as I mentioned in my Facebook, of course, if we get back to some of the core problems with rail infrastructure, particularly in southwest, is that we have services going to Warrnambool that actually don't have air conditioning on their rolling stock. So while we might talk about a 30-minute train ride potentially for Geelong sometime in the future, the reality is a lot of the rolling stock we currently have being used on our rail systems at the moment is antiquated and needs upgrading. My hope when the state government delivers on the 30th of April their budget, there's a substantial amount, like we did when we were in coalition, of over $700 million of new rolling stock for regional
Victoria. I think I think I've read that there is, but that might be more to do with some on the regional, the reference group for the fast rail.
Yeah, there's a feasibility. $150 million the state government's applied for a feasibility study, which is interesting in that a feasibility study is usually a study that determines whether, in fact, it's economic for that spend to happen or not. Mm. But it appears with the rush of federal and state elections that money's committed already, regardless of whether it's feasible. So
I think it was more about rolling stock. My question, and I'm really interested in trains, I'm really interested in getting better educated as well around bus networks here in Geelong, so I'll be getting a few more briefs in the next weeks about that, but does the Warrnambool line can take velocity all the way, so it's not a track issue?
There does need to be upgrades.
Right, so it's a track issue first.
Yeah. I heard the velocity trains are only cleared to operate until Warrn Ponds, is that right?
Well, my understanding is, as part of the commitment that we made leading up to the last state election, was that there had to be work in relation to signalling, right, crossroads, even some rail upgrades. But at the end of the day, the the view from the coalition was that we could use European style velocity trains for some of our regional track networks, and the Warrnambool line particularly, given we're using carriages that date back to 1930s, 40s and 50s.
Really?
Yep.
That far back?
I feel like it. If they're not, they're very close.
Well, no, I'm just interested because, you know, when I was running Regional Cities Vic, there was a real deficit in rolling stock of velocity trains, so there was a big order put in. This is when Apthine was premier. So I remember that, but I'm saying if there's more velocity trains being built and brought into the system, what else would need to happen for them to be used? So if there's extra expense, obviously, on getting the track up to date,
which
it's just good for me to know.
Part of that $633 million was upgrade of track signalling and the rail crossings.
And just didn't happen.
But the velocity is mainly, I think, built out of Dandenong and Ballarat.
Yes.
We use for the metro system.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Fast rail.
Yeah.
Because there's been some controversy about it, because the Public Transport Users Association, for example, says, well, the point of trains is that they have to stop. So there's no point having a train that just goes Geelong to Melbourne non-stop because no one wants to take that. I would personally like to take that because I sort of live vaguely near Geelong Station when I'm in Geelong. Mm. So for me to just get on a train there and be at Southern Cross in 32 minutes is great. But for people that live at North Geelong, South Geelong, Wyndham Vale, Tarneit, it's probably not as helpful.
It's quite a bizarre comment, really, and I'm not the rail expert by a long shot, but I've commuted for a really long time, so I understand where Paul Westcott's coming from.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I used to live in Mentone way back in the day, and there was express metro trains. You'd go from whatever
Caulfield
it was straight
to South Yarra.
Well, correct. So to me, it's more apparently about how the you know, the timetable works, because you've got an express and there's only one line. I think that's the big issue. Everyone gets held up or stuck or whatever it might be. So I think it's about the duplication of the line and then looking at the timetabling. But I think there's multiple kind of challenges around the fast rail in terms of what does it mean for Geelong? You don't want to become a dormitory suburb. You don't want people just to kind of live somewhere near a train line and just work and not contribute or get involved in community. So,
but then presumably on weekends they'd still contribute.
One would assume, of course. So I look at this and go, from a Community for Geelong perspective, fast rail's going to be, I think, would be the quickest, would be 10 years plus, is my understanding. But you need to start, otherwise it'll never happen. Mm. So I look at it and go, there's a long-term planning need around what we're going to do with fast rail, and I say there's obviously a difference between bullet trains and all of this stuff. So we're not saying we're having a bullet train. It would be ludicrous over that amount
Some
of distance.
Some people have said bullet trains, but
no.
A bullet train doesn't go at 160k an hour.
No, and look, the track's already able to cope with that, is my understanding. What I'm interested in is what do we do as a community about that in terms of workforce development, in terms of how we actually work on our other transport networks here in the city to help facilitate you know, greater access to a fast train, but knowing that Geelong's growing faster than Melbourne, so people are coming the other way as well. We also need to know that we're getting a lot of people and want probably more people looking from the Point Cook direction down to Geelong. So what, inversely, if we don't have a duplication of the line, we're going to miss out on that growth coming down. And Deakin is absolutely, I remember there was a change to the way that the trains worked, and Deakin really suffered in terms of getting all of those Western suburb students coming to Geelong. So all of these things need to be taken in consideration. So it's about not just, as I say, workforce development, but skills development, how people are using the trains now, and how do we think the CBD then will be positively affected as a result. So we're a really dynamic city.
Simon, you had the public transport portfolio, I think, for a while, the shadow one.
Regional, yes. And I do acknowledge the Committee for Geelong's, one of its priorities was to have a faster train service between Geelong and Melbourne, as was G21 and COG and others. But my understanding was the regional rail link was meant to be duplicated at Wyndham Vale, where, you know, some of the issues are. And, of course, money was transferred out of that project into other areas, so the dual duplication never happened. Well, what I would probably pose to Jennifer is, and I note in some of her commentary today in the paper about working collectively with the other stakeholder groups, was this argy-bargy between the federal and state about funding, particularly for rail for Geelong. If I remember, the duplication was first sort of talked about 4 or 5 years ago, and then we had the state government commit a certain amount of funding for the Warren Ponds duplication to allow more train services out to our southwest, and then the federal state government came on board. But it's been 4 years on and we're still talking about the need for it, yet there's been no fully committed funding. And again, for the stabling yards, which were supposed to go from North Geelong out to Warn Ponds, we're still arguing the toss about the land to be preserved for that to happen. So the time all this takes, Mitch, which I think Jennifer's talking about, is a very long sort of term. And it goes over a number of elections and a number of governments, both state and federal. But in my mind, if we could actually get the two together with the help of our stakeholder groups in Geelong to fast-track some of the bickering that's going on in relation to funding, and we've seen it with the city deal, of course, where there's been argy-bargy going on with that, to actually agree and then get on and start building.
See, there's been some criticism, I think, of the Liberals and Sarah Henderson because she's committed, I think it was $2 billion or thereabouts for the fast rail. But if you look at the forward estimates of the budget, apparently that is not a line item because the forward estimates is only 4 years. But they're saying that the construction of this fast rail can't even start until Sunshine is sorted out because the Sunshine to Airport Rail Link apparently isn't in integral part of the whole thing. So that's way off into the future. Construction may not start for another, what, 5, 6, 7 years?
Well, it's to do with the Airport Rail Link and access to Southern Cross. But I will echo what Simon, I think what Simon was saying about the duplication of the line from, through to Warn Ponds. That is a priority for the committee. And I don't think we've gone out publicly saying all of this sort of stuff, but I have spoken to Elaine Carbines in detail when we go and talk to politicians about that being really important. And that being a really important first priority, really, to get that done. So you won't hear any bickering from the committee about that being a priority. I just know that there is a longer-term view around that, some of that planning. I mean, this is not uncomplicated. So, as I said, I'm going to be getting some briefings from public servants responsible in the next couple of weeks around not just the rail, but how it all integrates into the bus network as well. And, so I don't think you'll get any argument from the committee that it's important to do the duplication.
And to be fair to the coalition's or the federal government's announcement is that a lot of these larger projects are funded in the sort of forward estimate part of the budget. So you can't expect $2 billion to be plonked on the table for the next 12 months because the reality is the state government has yet to do the feasibility study. It's only just announced the committee, the advisory committee.
You can't even start spending the $2 billion until that Sunshine thing and the airport rail is sorted out. So that's way off into the never-never.
You've got to think about what it's going to be used for, though. So this is what Bruce Harwood's been talking about in terms of the alliance that he's formed, which is if you don't ask the questions now, you know, will it be too late around how regional trains are going to access that tunnel. And that tunnel has basically just started construction just recently, correct, last couple of weeks. So I think it's about saying how do we make sure that the regional voice is heard now when those decisions are being made. And yes, it's a long-term kind of technical process to go through the planning, but you need to have those conversations early. So that's all I would say.
Can I ask you, what is the Committee for Geelong doing over the advocacy for the federal election? We were just saying to Simon before that the federal election date, we think, is now going to be the 18th because the 11th has kind of passed us by because the election hasn't been called yet. So that is sort of the timetable that at least we're working on here. Your thoughts?
Yeah, probably a couple of things. One is that we give our members the opportunity to hear from the federal politicians themselves. So Sarah Henderson is briefing our members this week. That's all booked out, oversubscribed, which is fantastic. And then we've got Richard Miles and Libby Coker coming, I think, the week or two later. But Northern Arc is something that, I've noticed, obviously, council taking a very strong stand on. And it's always been a priority also around Committee for Geelong and the work that they did late last year leading into the last state elections. So if we're going to look at something, I would say that will be really important for the committee to have a voice on. And I noticed there was an editorial by Daryl McClure in the paper last week basically saying to council, why don't you grab everyone and get everyone together and make sure that you're coordinated in your approach. So I welcome that. And I haven't had a chance to actually talk to the city, but I'm hoping that I'll have a chance to talk to them really soon and get a really thorough brief on that and then work out what we can do to support it.
All right. Well, Beverly MacArthur is on. Her meeting obviously didn't go quite as long as anticipated. So I'll let you both have the final word, talk about whatever you want in the free kick time, and then you can be off. So, Jennifer?
Yeah, look, there was sorry to talk about the Geelong Advertiser, but in the paper
please.
Today there is a...
They do listen, and it's a great newspaper.
Yeah, I love the Addy. No, they've been really good and written a story today about how the Committee for Geelong Geelong's really interested in working with community. And by that, I mean that we'll be putting out expressions of interest to community, as in not-for-profit and community organisations, industry groups, to say, look, fill out a form and tell us what's important to you. We want to hear your thinking. We're much better for diversity of thinking. We also can't do all the research required to actually understand what's going on, particularly around social issues. So I'd just say open invitation to contact the Committee for Geelong over the next month, and we'll be assessing those applications in May, and hopefully moving forward we'll have a pretty good contingent of incredibly dedicated and very strategically minded community organisations as part of our think tank.
Wonderful. Simon?
Well, I must say Jennifer gets better press in the Geelong Advertiser than I do of late. But she has
posts.
Better story to tell, to be fair. But I'm looking forward to our Liberal candidate for Corio being announced this week, and obviously we'll hit
the ground
running.
This week.
Oh, but someone was asking
I hear a little
me.
Birdie says it's very close.
So. As in, like, you won't have a pre-selection, it'll just be someone.
I can't go into detail.
Can you
Jennifer?
Just mouth okay. the initials?
It won't be a convention by the sound of it.
Bev might have more news on that, but we do need to have a candidate up and running this week, and certainly the Northern Arc will be a high priority for us.
For the sake of democracy,
have it
say,
front
you
and
need
centre.
To have a candidate there.
We will have a candidate, Jennifer,
okay,
and it will happen very soon.
Excellent.
Thank you, people. Always a good conversation. We'll catch up again soon.
Thank you.
Jennifer Cromedy there from the Committee for Geelong, and Simon Ramsey, former Member of Parliament for Western Victoria.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.